Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Tuesday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. And, Jim, we've talked a lot about the class warfare strategy of President Obama and how it's a tiresome thing, but you know it's getting really tiresome when the Washington Post has decided that they're tired of hearing about it. Today, Charles Lane, not exactly a rabid conservative for anyone who's seen him on the All-Star panel on Special Report on Fox News and other places, not a raving liberal either, but basically in an opinion piece today saying that the president is being overly simplistic in his rhetoric. He cites new poll data showing that 82% of Americans are more interested in seeing the economy grow, while 46% are more interested in redistribution of wealth, which surprisingly coincides with the number of people who don't pay taxes. So that's a pretty good parallel right there. Shocking that that would be the number for the redistribution crowd. But the fact that the Washington Post is not just cheering alongside as Obama walks by is kind of a good sign. I'm not expecting it late in the campaign next year, but at least for now, it's good to see that even those who, for the most part, are probably supportive of the Obama administration are getting a little bit weary of this argument.
It is a good sign, and I think it's very revealing that this is what the Obama campaign has been driven to. I myself kind of have this sneaking suspicion that all of this conversation is kind of noise beyond a slightly more serious and perhaps less easily answered questions like, are American workers really falling behind? It is part of our problem that we have trained ourselves to get a bunch of skills that are just not needed in the global economy anymore, but that there are booming fields otherwise. A couple of weeks ago, I took a trip to Colorado, and they talked about there's enormous potential in terms of energy extraction of all different kinds. We know the XL pipeline job, et cetera. But to do that sort of thing, you need to know how to work on a pipeline. You need to know how to work in fracking. You need to know environmental engineering and geological engineering and ordinary skills that you don't skills that perhaps not enough young workers have studied and trained and tried to get into. We've laughed at the Occupy Wall Street folks and kind of argued that perhaps there are too many sociology majors in there. Well, maybe part of the problems with our high unemployment rate and people's difficulty entering the workforce is, are we really studying and learning the skills that are needed in the economy of in this current era and years to come? And I think that's something that not necessarily Republicans have done an enormous amount of discussion on. I think it's also interesting that Obama has no interest in making that kind of an argument because it would kind of implicitly involve blaming the unemployed themselves. And he'd much rather blame rich people. So good to see that simplistic populism is tiring even folks who are inclined to give Obama more of the benefit of the doubt than we are. Having said that, I doubt Obama will let go of it between now and 2012 because pretty much this is what he's got.
On to Martini number two now. Speaking of no good ideas, we've got this fight between the Republican House and the Democratic Senate over extending the current payroll tax rates, which were reduced by a percentage point about this time last year. The House Republicans passed a year-long extension. The Senate, led by the Democrats, passed a two-month extension, which Senator Tom Harkin was very happy to point out led us right into the State of the Union message, so Obama could essentially demagogue the issue again. For some reason, Mitch McConnell thought the House Republicans would be fine with that. They're not, and John Boehner said so. And here's a little bit of analysis from Charles Krauthammer on the issue on Fox News on Monday night.
The bill passed by the Senate is an abomination. It's one of the worst ever crafted by the hands of man, and saying that in this Congress is saying a lot. It can't be administered probably in time and fairly. It's nuts as tax policy, a two-month extension.
And he was basically reacting to the point that a lot of payroll experts are saying you can't adjust the system in the next 10 days to only calibrate for a 60-day extension here. And so this is all just a bunch of logistical mumbo-jumbo that Congress is essentially doing here. And Krauthammer and many other people, of course, are also pointing out, Jim, that 60 days is not exactly going to be massive incentive for small business owners and others to hire because of the complete lack of certainty. 60 days is not exactly a good long-term strategy for deciding what your workforce is going to look like.
Yay, temp jobs. I'm just going to look at the front page of the Washington Post today, Greg, and I see two sub-headlines. This is the top story, page A1. Payroll tax cut mired in standoff. Then right underneath that it says, Republicans in House unbending. And then immediately under that it says, Reid vows no new talks. He votes today. Now, House Republicans are unbending, but Reid is vowing no new talks. My way or the highway. And yet somehow it's the House Republicans who are unbending in all this. pretty much what we've come to expect from this. I kind of marvel at how we could laugh at how the philosophy of everyone in politics is that when my side, you know, doesn't want to give an inch, it's because they're standing on principle and standing up for their values. And when the other guys are not willing to move at all, it's because they're stubborn and mulish and you know, marching in lockstep to some crazy ideology. It's a little frustrating to see that kind of philosophy exhibited in the alleged objective or fair headlines of the Washington Post. But, hey, it's what we've come to expect in these circumstances.
Yeah, unfortunately. So we'll see what the House Republicans do today. Hard to say exactly what will happen, but something tells me this will get done one way or another before the end of the year. Wouldn't be all that sad to see all the senators have to come back and vote one more time just to put them in the inconvenience that they've put the rest of us in. On to martini number three now, Jim, and I'm pretty sure you can remember all the way back to 2001, the terrorist attacks of 9/11, the ensuing Operation Enduring Freedom, which was launched about a month later. In between, there was a little speech President Bush gave to a joint session of Congress where he said there would be no distinction between the terrorists who attacked us and those who harbor them. He also gave an ultimatum to the Taliban at that time to hand over the leadership of Al-Qaeda or face their same fate, or share in their fate, I think was his exact line. And apparently now that whole narrative has changed because Vice President Biden says we're not fighting the Taliban. You could make the case, I suppose, that that policy has changed a bit since the last 10 years have unfolded. But then Jake Carney decided to go back and explain why we went to Afghanistan in the first place yesterday when he was asked about it by ABC's Jake Tapper. This is great.
And I think it's important, I know you've written about this, to understand what most Americans, I think, know, which is that we didn't invade Afghanistan. We did not send U.S. military personnel into Afghanistan because the Taliban were in power. They had been in power. We went into Afghanistan because Al-Qaeda had launched an attack against the United States from Afghanistan.
And were harbored and encouraged by the Taliban. Was it some sort of Jedi mind trick that he's trying to pull over on us here? It hasn't been that long ago, Jim.
I marvel at this. Now, it's worth noting that you know, on the you know, the objective facts of what he's stating is correct. Having said that, we gave the Taliban an ultimatum, and it was not an ultimatum with like a as far as I know, some sort of expiration date, to use one of my favorite phrases. The idea that, look, turn over bin Laden and the rest of Al-Qaeda or else we will hunt you guys down and we will be at war until about 6 months after we get bin Laden and then everything will be cool again. You know? I mean, we know who these guys are. We told them, look, you've got the guy who killed 3,000 of our people. Turn him over, turn everybody else over, and then maybe we'll let you, you know, keep breathing. And they said no. So it's on. I don't understand. When the Taliban, if the Taliban is not our enemy, which is apparently Biden said the exact same thing. I just saw this great observation on Twitter that if Michelle Bachmann had said the Taliban is not our enemy, it would be considered the world's biggest gaffe of all time and further evidence that she's completely unqualified for it. But the vice president blurts these things out all the time, and it's considered absolutely totally normal. Wacky Uncle Joe just being wacky Uncle Joe. And so I just kind of marvel at If President Obama and Vice President Biden and the rest of the administration want to argue that the U.S. should cease hostilities with the Taliban, and let's face it, we've been allegedly in negotiations with these guys for a long time, and even General Petraeus was, you know, on board with that to the extent that he thought he could get useful advantages out of that. But we got to make sure that if this is going to be a ceasefire, it can't just be that because they outlasted us. You know, I want it to be, all right, because they've decided they will never, ever, ever help Al-Qaeda again. And if we do it next time, we bring in even more daisy cutters. We eventually reached a state of peace with Germany and Japan and all these other countries that once were, you know, mortal enemies with us. But it's because they had changed their ways and were no longer going to be a threat to us. Are we really all that certain the Taliban is no longer a threat to us? I certainly think the guys in Afghanistan would say, our troops over there would say, no, the Taliban's still trying to kill us. So we know where we stand with them. The idea that they're not our enemy doesn't make any sense. And I kind of wish, you know, folks would start calling out the vice president and the rest of the administration when they start saying things like this.
It's a gaffe a minute for Joe Biden, but you're right. If it were any one of the Republican presidential candidates or Dan Quayle way back in the day, obviously this would have been front page fodder, late night fodder for days, if not weeks. But unfortunately, it's not a level playing field, and there's more Joe Biden material than most people know what to do with. So, Jim, have a good day. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
Looking forward to it, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Please join us again on Wednesday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.